This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
Global currencies, ethanol demand destruction, volatility in cattle futures, contract lows in hogs, Chinese crush, South American supply chain issues, Black Sea wheat export restrictions. No, that is not a list of the top stories of the year. It's just the stuff that happened this week. And we're touching them all on today's AgriTalk.
From an apocalypse bunker nowhere near anything via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we're joined by Dan Bossi from Ag Resource. And in the final segment, let's talk planet Earth. The Friday Farm Pews. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it so much. Yes, we've got the grain markets closed. The livestock markets are closed. Thank God for the livestock markets being closed. And we've got the Dow off 480 points as we get into the final hour of trade here. So,
That's not bad.
That's interesting perspective. Okay. On a day like today, after the rallies, you know, the rip your face, as Bubba would say, the rip your face off rallies that we saw earlier this week in equities, if we would have been 1,000 points lower today, and we still could be, we've got a long ways to go, and we're not that far in the big picture from 1,000 points lower. But, you know, you're exactly right. It doesn't feel that bad to be 480 points lower.
Yeah.
That's what we've come to in this new world, I guess. Here in the state of Iowa, we now have two more cases in which Iowans have fallen to COVID-19 complications. The death count continues to rise in the states. We're all trying to figure out how to best deal with this. And what we can do in our small little parts of the world contain the virus. And it's not easy.
Were you delicately trying to say that those two Iowans perished?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We're now up to three. We're now up to three in the state.
All right. Well.
Yep. All in our district, too.
Really?
just so you know. Yeah. It's something that we're watching very, very closely, and as the cases mount and we try to figure out exactly when this is all going to peak and when we can start to get back to some sort of normalcy, it's very difficult, and it's not difficult to imagine that we've got another month of this because of some of the projections that are out there.
Absolutely.
Scary stuff. Scary stuff, but we'll get through
fine.
It.
We'll be fine.
Get through it.
That's absolutely.
Right. All right, man. Let's go ahead and get into what was moving the markets today.
Sure thing. Well, Russia's ag ministry has proposed limiting grain exports for 3 months. Included in the export restriction is milling quality wheat. Ukraine has also proposed limiting wheat exports and will be providing wheat flour to the local market to slow down a jump in prices. Suddenly, market watchers are reporting the U.S. is one of the only exporting countries still offering milling quality wheat. July hard red winter wheat was a quarter of a penny higher at 4.91. Let me check my soft red quote here. July, up a penny, 5.57 and a quarter. July spring wheat firmed 5.5 cents to 5.45 and a half. Chip.
Okay. Yeah. You know, isn't that something we talked about? How we've been talking about for 2 years, 3 years, Davis, about how we have been trying to become a reliable supplier of wheat to the world, and how do we build up our export demand? Well, we're proving to be the most reliable supplier of wheat to the world. It's one of the things that I want to talk with Dan Bossi about from Ag Resource today. Dan, I don't know many that have got their finger on the pulse of the wheat market better than what Dan does, so we're going to dig into that early. Yeah.
USDA this morning announced the sale of just over 114,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to unknown destinations in the current marketing year. It is now widely thought that China is the unknown buyer. Really? and the country has now wrapped up its initial tariff quota purchases. Many traders also now expect China to expand its reduced tariff purchases of U.S. corn. While the corn market is finding some good news in exports, domestic demand destruction through a struggling ethanol industry is dominating price action at this time. May corn futures were 2¾ cents lower at 3.46 even. July corn down 2½ cents, 3.51¾. December corn closed at 3.64¼, down 3 cents today.
You know how I sometimes complain that as a market nears upside targets or downside targets, that the analysts will then pull those targets and project an even higher or even lower target. Don't do that with the corn exports to China here. I think we're at danger of doing that, because now that we are filling the initial tariff quota purchases. Right. Now that I think that we are getting that filled, don't make the mistake of pumping up your and the market's expectations here on it going forward. We've seen some good sales. Let's see some proof that China's actually going to expand it there. Hey, I didn't give you the weekly changes on wheat, and I want to do that before I do.
Yeah, let's hear them.
Because I think it is important. July SRW wheat was at 21½ cents this week. July HRW up 19 cents, and the spring July contract was up 17¾ cents. May corn up 2¼. Dece corn up a penny. It felt worse than that all week.
Yeah, it really did. Well, USDA this morning also announced the sale of more than 163,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to Mexico in the current marketing year. China is dealing with 10-year lows in soybean and soybean meal supplies, and COVID-19-related issues are disrupting movement of soybeans in Brazil and Argentina. This has market watchers looking to the USPNW for signs of increased bean movement that would signal more U.S. beans have been sold to China. May bean futures 1¼ cents higher, 8.81½. July firmed a half cent, 8.85¼. November 2020 bean futures closed at 8.76¾, down 2¼ cents. Chip.
Yeah, those are all things that we're going to be talking about with Dan here in just a little bit. On the week, May soybeans up 19 cents. November soybeans up 16 cents.
Feeder cattle futures were limit down, and live cattle futures took advantage of expanded daily trading limits to post sharp declines today. Boxed beef prices have been lower this week, and choice graded boxes fell another $1.46 this morning, but cash bids are trading about $10 above April futures. Yeah. The separation of live cattle futures from the cash market has left many scratching their heads about what's happening in the cattle market right now. April live cattle futures were down $4.50 to $100.95. August cattle dropped 4.02½ to close at 90.45, and April feeders were down $4.50, 120.60. And finally, on the snout side, traders say yesterday's quarterly hogs and pigs report failed to provide any support for prices. The total number of hogs and pigs are up 4% from year ago, and the data signals slaughter will run about 4% above year ago through spring and summer. April lean hogs down $4.50, 58.45. July hogs fell 3.80 to 66.80. Doggone it, Chip.
Yeah, it's a tough day. Contract lows going on in that hog market. And when you look at the summer month farrowing intentions for hogs, you could say that might be price supportive for the long term for those far back month contracts, but nobody believes it. That was the bottom line on that. Nobody believes that that farrowing intentions are going to be down as much as was indicated in the H&P report. April live cattle on the week up $2.30. April feeders up $1.77½, and April lean hogs were down $3.12½. We got Dan Bossi coming up next on AgriTalk.
2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy company's work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hello, Ross. Tell me a little bit about that commitment to developing new solutions.
We've become one of the best innovators in the industry because of the resources we invest to keep our R&D engine humming. On average, we spend over 10 years and nearly $280 million to develop novel seed treatment molecules. Our current new product lineup and pipeline are truly tremendous.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hear more from Ross next week, but for more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
This is all my right. Favorite part of the Little Baby Duck song.
Is it?
It's the extended remix. It's not commercial enough for radio, but this is the real version.
The real version right there.
If I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong.
Welcome back. I'm Tripp. That's Davis. Lots to talk about on today's show, but just to recap real quickly, we had some pressure on corn prices. Soybean prices were mixed. A little bit of strength in the nearby, some pressure in the back months. Soybean oil traded to the upside. Soybean meal was mostly lower. Wheat traded higher. Sharply lower trade in the livestock markets today. Dan Bossy is with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago. He joins us right now. Dan, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm very well, Chip, and you're fine also, I guess, safe and sound?
Absolutely, absolutely. We are confined to the bunker and doing the best we can down here. So, yeah, everything's good, man. So
Good.
Absolutely. I want to jump right to it because we've got a heck of a list that I want to get through, and I'm going to go straight to Twitter for the first question, Dan. It comes from, I'm going to guess it's South Central Michigan Farmer, at SCMI Farmer. With all of the trillions the U.S. is throwing at the economy, what effect will that have on the dollar versus the Brazilian currency, the Argentinian peso, the Russian ruble, and other currencies? And he's really looking for what it means for the currencies of our main export competitors. And then he wants you to take it another step. And what about future inflation? Does it impact our commodity inflation going forward?
Well, it's a great question.
Yeah.
And you know, if you think about it, Chip, it's the right question, because if you want to get a bull market going in agriculture, we're lacking a demand driver. But the other thing that could happen would be a 20 or so percent fall in the dollar. And boy, would that shift us into a more bullish landscape. As we think about the trillions, the $2 trillion that is either about to be or will be signed by President Trump this afternoon, it's kind of like pouring kerosene in a kerosene lamp, and it's going to be burned through relatively quickly over the next 5 to 7 weeks. It's going to plug a lot of holes. It is a bunch of cash. Don't get me wrong. It's three times larger than the amount we shoved at the problem in 2007-08 with the banking crisis.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to be inflationary. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to have a big impact on the U.S. dollar. Part of the equation as an economist is that, you know, inflation is more dollars chasing fewer goods. Well, we've got the more dollars aspect of it. We still have too many goods. And with crude oil down around $20 a barrel, I'm still worried about the deflationary aspect of the virus and what it's doing to the world economy. Maybe if we come back from this, we get a vaccine or something is done scientifically to help the world, the velocity of money will start increasing. When that velocity of money, by that I'm saying my pocket to your pocket, the Bill's pocket, the Sally's pocket, when that happens, that velocity, that's when you start to see inflationary embers. But I believe that's probably 9 months away at a minimum right now.
9 months. Okay. Dan, when you look at everything that has happened just to this point with related to COVID-19, are you seeing any evidence that we are going to see any material changes in the supply chain going forward? Are we going to bring back to the U.S. manufacturing of some of the basic materials that we need?
I think you will see that to some degree. A lot of that will depend how long this goes on. I think the longer it goes on, the more frustrated companies become. I think they'll think about bringing things back home. You already see companies like GM and Invigorated and Tesla to start building respirators and providing masks. So I think U.S. business is getting it. Though at the end of the day, the reason that folks are producing overseas is because of cheaper labor. And, you know, if you can hire a Brazilian, and I have an office in Brazil, I can hire someone very well down there for $4,000 a year.
Yeah.
It's very different than the staff I would have to pay in Chicago. And so ultimately, it's that wage differential that makes the difference of what companies will do. So there may be some movement back to the U.S., but I don't think it'll be wholesale until there's some levelization of the salary structure that exists today.
Right, right. Or just a complete change in consumers' attitudes, and they decide, listen, if it does say 100% American made, I'm willing to pay X percent more. And I don't know if that's going to happen on a wide scale.
I think that's right, Chip. If they can pay the same, they'll always buy American. The problem is, will American consumers be willing to pay more for that label that says USA? And, you know, we're talking about 30 to 40% more. We're not talking a small amount. And that's the hard bump to get over.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, one, you talk about $2 trillion, and they're calling it a rescue package. I don't care for that, or relief package, whatever it is that we're going to call it. So you've got that money. You've got the Fed that has basically said, we'll put $4 trillion in on this too. Oh, by the way, Jay Powell saying that we're basically in recession. Did that surprise you at all?
No, our data would show that the second quarter, and we're not there yet, we're still in the first quarter, but we're looking at a GDP rate of down, you know, 18 to 22%.
Yeah.
So,
you
know, the definition of recession is two consecutive quarters. We're not doing that. We're all speculating today because we're not even there yet. But obviously, keeping businesses shuttered and having 3 million jump on the employment ranks this week is not a step toward away from recession. I think we're probably in one right now.
Okay.
Can I jump in quick with a question?
Yeah, do it.
Dan Davis Michelson here. Hey, buddy. We're not in the second quarter yet, so that news is yet forthcoming. Is that already baked in, or as we get more confirmation of the negative impacts to the economy, are we going to continue to see, you know, more panic selling and renewed panic selling? And oh my gosh, here's, you know, now it's confirmed. Or are we slowly baking all that in presently?
I think a lot of it's baked in already. I would tell you somewhere, our data would suggest somewhere between 75-80% baked in already. I think a lot of the shock and awe of this is gone. What we don't know is the duration. You know, is this going to be like President Trump says, we're going to get going again to some degree selectively after Easter? Is this going to linger on into May or June? Those are the key questions, and only the virus can tell us that, and they're not saying much. And so it's duration of viral that goes on that will be the big director.
Right. Okay. So we've got all of this money that is flowing into the system right now. We shouldn't underestimate the money that is all, you know, and I understand that we're driving less and we're using less fuel and it's taking up less of our pocket money than it normally would. But still, Dan, this drop in gas prices at the pump has got to have an impact too.
I think it's a big, and talking to Texas today, they see they're seeing gas prices near or below $1 a gallon.
Yeah.
I never thought in my lifetime I would see that. Again, when I was a young man, I'm an old man now, but we were 50 cents a gallon, but it's amazing to me. But this fight between the Russians and the Saudis, along with the contraction globally, we saw the EAI this week discuss 20 million barrels drop of a global demand of crude, something that's never happened before. Yeah. This is what's driving oil. Thankfully, we're filling up strategic tankers, our own strategic reserve, that kind of thing. But as they get filled up, I mean, there is that risk that we could push crude into the teens, mid to lower teens. And that's something that, as this battle goes on, I think is worrisome as we look towards the late spring or early summer.
Right. Okay. Take us over to the biofuel markets from the energy markets there, Dan. We're facing demand destruction on a level that we haven't seen for quite some while from the ethanol industry.
It's a shame. It is really a shame out in the biofuel path, the ethanol, the biodiesel. I mean, it very rarely do we see ethanol trading at 20 cents a gallon premium to RBOB or CBOB, the two gasolines that needed to be looked at, or biodiesel premium to diesel. It doesn't happen very often. So as I think about it, you know, the ethanol industry is I don't want to use the word collapsing, but slowly lowering its runs. I've been reducing my corn ethanol grind estimates accordingly. We think it's around 5 billion bushels for the old crop year. That's down 375 million bushels from this year. And then the question is, how quickly do we get back next, you know, in the year ahead as we start a new crop? And are people going to get back to driving? Does the virus come back again next fall? These are all unknowns, but at the moment, when you're looking at ethanol facilities losing 70 to 80 cents a bushel, it's just financially hard after a very difficult road that they've been on already. So look for more issues in the weeks ahead. I don't think these plants can hold on much more than another month to 6 weeks before we're going to see some mass shutdowns and closures.
Okay. All right. Very good. Hey, we're
not
coming
happy
up to
news. I know.
Yeah, no, it's not
happy news, but we can't sugarcoat this stuff because we need to get legislatures and we need to get Congress and we need to have others get involved. I've been asked from Washington, what can we do? Maybe a strategic ethanol reserve would be a good thing right now. We need to think outside the box.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do. All right, Dan, we're coming up to the first break. We're going to keep Dan, obviously, for the second segment. Dan Bossi from Ag Resource. When we come back, we've got to go to South America, Dan. Figure out what is going on with the flow of soybeans out of Brazil and Argentina. That's next on AgriTalk.
When weeds get tough, AmVac answers with the power of Impact brand herbicides, proven to control key grasses and tough, glyphosate-resistant broadleaf weeds. Impact is the standard in corn safety. Impact brand herbicides, tough on weeds, not on corn. Get more information at AMVAC.com/impact. AMVAC, Impact, and Impact Z are trademarks owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Always read and follow label instructions. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. The U.S. now has the most coronavirus cases in the world. UK Prime Minister Johnson says he has coronavirus. Farm input suppliers are working to ensure adequate supplies ahead of the spring planting season. A trucker shortage is causing problems in India. India has started a three-week lockdown this week. China is working to increase vegetable production. China plans to increase its production of vegetables in response to concerns about food supplies. Beef buying frenzy has seemingly come to an end with some pressure on boxed beef earlier this week and this morning. And the Hogs and Pigs report confirms supply side fears. That is today's Pro Farmer headline news. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip Lorre, got Davis Michelson with me, and we are talking with Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company today. Before we get back to the conversation with Dan, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed, Davis.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat was a quarter of a penny higher at 491.5. July soft red firmed a penny to 557.25. May corn futures were 2.75 cents lower at 346 even. December corn closed at 364.25, down 3 cents today. May soybean futures were 1.25 cents higher, 881.5. Novi bean futures closed at 876.75, down 2.25 today. On the livestock side, April live cattle futures were down $4.50 to $100.95. April feeders were down $4.50, 120.60. April lean hogs off $4.50. Little hat trick there for you. 58.45 on your April hogs. There's your quick market recap. Like it or not.
You got the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer report at the end of the show, right?
Well, that's a big 10-4 grid, buddy.
All right, we'll get to it here in just a little bit. Let's get back to Dan Bossi, Ag Resource Company. Dan, hey, you follow the dairy market, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. At Real Country 1430, hey, Brian, up in Durand, Wisconsin, dairy market's getting slammed hard. Any suggestion for dairy farmers?
Really not. It's all about concerns of as we see it again, export trade diminishing and the consumer not consuming as much dairy products. Principally, you saw the butter market kind of hit $1.50 almost a pound the other day. Our view is that the Chinese are starting to make some purchases in dairy. We're hearing that and along with beef, and so we're hearing a little bit of optimism going. But listen, this is a tough time, and like in a lot of commodities, it's related to strength in the dollar and just an apathy that goes along with this virus globally.
Yep. Okay. All right. At Toquam Fam Farm, here we go. Can you explain the situation in Brazil? Hearing certain places are not allowing trucks into crushers, causing low levels of soybeans at the plants. What's the situation in Brazil? And throw Argentina in there as well, Dan.
Yeah, no, there is concerns, of course, just like here, where if you've got the infection where people don't want to be close to each other, and it is slowing down farm movement of beans, both in Brazil and Argentina, to processors and to export. So far, not a major disruption, if you will, but it's something everybody's watching. I was doing my data work on Brazil today. There's 14 million metric tons of vessels waiting to pick up beans in Brazil.
Jeez.
It's a record amount that we can find at any period. But it does show you the Chinese have really booked ahead, and they've got a flotilla right now of 11 million metric tons heading their way. But the world is focusing its attention on Brazil. If for some reason they do have a breakdown in their mechanics, whether it be human or otherwise, of loading vessels, it will have a big impact on the market.
Okay. But
Argentina. But today, Chip, I got to say, you know, we're just not breaking down today. Argentina maybe a little more. The unions down there have called for a 15-day strike. This would be the people that inspect the cargoes, so they certify them. The government has not ruled yet. The Fernandez government has not ruled on that yet. We're looking very carefully at what may happen. But, you know, the Argentinians probably have a bigger risk of going on hiatus than the Brazilians.
Yeah.
2 years ago in Brazil, just so you know, they changed the law down there so that if a port decided to close for whatever reason, they couldn't do it anymore. Stevedores in the ports are now hired individually by the companies, the Bungies, the Cargills, the ADMs. And so if someone there has the disease, has COVID or something like that, they're just going to replace them to keep going.
Right.
So my focus is more in Argentina.
Okay. All right. Very good. How did Chinese soybean and meal stocks get as tight as they are right now, Dan?
Well, they basically came back from the holiday and crushers weren't running. They were drawing down on supplies, and then they didn't have the ports working to get soybeans inland. And so you had this cascading effect, which really caught the livestock producer short of meal and feed. You know, it's something that's still being worked through. But our data and our contacts over in China suggest we're still only about 70 to 72% up on crush facilities in China. They're not all back online yet. So that's another limitation in terms of getting meal supplies replenish there. Our hope is that more of them come line in the future, but there is a fairly good supply of soybeans heading to China. The question is, do they make them inland fast enough to take care of the domestic market?
Well, and that's why if we do run into any hiccup or road bump in that movement from South America into China, it could slip a little bit of demand up into the U.S. The corn demand that has shown up this last week, the unknown destinations, Dan, it's just kind of assumed that is China and that they booked those initial tariff rate quota purchases. Is that how you're viewing it?
Yeah, no, we announced on Wednesday evening when you heard that CAFCO was out there buying 250,000 tons. I think this is the million metric tons of corn in total of the first tranche, if you will. Okay. There will be others coming. We still think there's 3 million metric tons that could be bought on the TRQ. And where this corn is going is to the Chinese, to the southern areas of China, the Guangdong, and where those livestock areas are. You remember that in the northeast, they have to transit through Hubei. And at the moment, it looks easier and cheaper to just buy it from the U.S. and transport it to southeast China.
Okay. All right. Very good. Nobody watches the global wheat market more than, or has a better perspective on what's happening than you do, Dan. I've said that for decades now. What is going on out of the Black Sea?
You're making me feel old now, Chip. But thank you. I tell you, the Russians this morning, and of course this was the Ag Ministry, it's now on Putin's desk. They asked for a 7 million metric ton quota for April through June on total grain exports. Flour prices are through the roof in Russia, now at a record high. And so a lot of that is ruble related. The ruble went out today at 80 to 1, a record low. And that's all tied to crude oil. So consumers there are seeing that inflation that we would like to show up here, right. But it's not. But the Russians are feeling it because they don't have a central banker that has a reserve currency. But in saying that, Putin probably will go along with this 7 million metric tons, which means probably 2 to 3 million tons of world wheat demand will be shifted elsewhere, unlikely to the EU. So we are always in that position to pick up some of that business, you know, as we go through May and June. I think April is pretty covered. It would be May and June, the time slots that everybody would look at.
Okay. All right. What are you thinking on wheat, the wheat market, the wheat price going forward?
So, you know, it really comes down to this. When you look at world stock use ratios of major exporters, we're almost at a record low. So this means that the Russian crop, that Black Sea crop, gets to be very important as we think about the April, May, June timeframe. And I think the entire world wheat outlook hinges upon the rain in Ukraine and Russia as we think about the next 2 to 3 months.
Okay. All right. At Long Gone John 81, how would the corn board look if we raised a normal crop last year? And I'm going to take that a step further and say, take me out to the 2020-21 marketing year and talk about your balance sheet there on corn too, Dan. So, you know, if we had raised a normal crop last year, would we be under $3 right now? I don't know.
Yeah, we it'd be close. I don't even want to talk about it, Chip, but I'll go ahead. All right. Yeah. We are carrying, because of diminished ethanol demand now, and even including some of that Chinese demand, an old crop balance of around 2.35 billion bushels.
2.35?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And for next year, and again, this is, you look at export pace, we're only down 50 million bushels, but when you start making those additions or slicing, if you will, to ethanol, it gets to be important. If you think of next year, you don't even want to hear my number. It's I'm over 3.5 billion bushels. So,
I could hear you building up to it, Dan. I did not expect you to go all the way to 3.5, but I could hear you building up to it.
We're there, and I don't feel good about it, but our listeners can think about opportunities when December corn makes it back to maybe 370 or 380. Unless we have a big weather problem or get a surprise on Tuesday, a bullish surprise, it's just hard for me to think about corn having a story unless we turn around the crude oil market in quick fashion.
Okay. How does the reference price in the PLC program come into play on your marketing decisions, Dan?
Well, this may be a strange little caveat to the whole verse of corn being under $3 potentially at harvest. And that is, as the market goes down, and if farmers can think ahead a little bit, and you look at your payments on revenue insurance and PLC or ARC, if the market goes down substantially, you actually do a little better. I mean, purgatory for the marketer is somewhere between 330 and 380 a bushel, because at that level, we're not getting what we should from the government. I went through the numbers, and I was surprised that as you got over under $3, that the payments really started to pick up. So we are farming for the government. I think that's where we're at today. And it's unfortunate, but I don't know what to say. Assuming we grow trendline yields and assuming we plant somewhere between 94 and 95 million acres, it's going to be a big supply in the year ahead.
Okay, we get those numbers next week. Is that where you're at, 94, 95 on corn planting?
We're actually at 95. I adjusted a million acres from corn and put them back into beans. Beans were not quite as heavy, but we are over 700 million bushels. So I think it's a little difficult to go forward. And, you know, one thing to really point out to the listeners, which is something really strange today, if you look at the soybean market, there's no carry as you go all the way out to May of next year. If I look at the Gulf today and I look at where Paraguay or Brazil is offering soybeans next February and March, they are 70 cents cheaper than we are in November. And so it's that currency thing that's kicking us in again. So the Brazilian farmer who is looking at record profits for soybeans, at least my farmers down there, are aggressively selling, and that's why you're seeing that pressure in the new crop position.
Okay. I've only got 20, 25 seconds for this. Talk to me about COVID-19. What's it look like in 6 weeks?
I think it'll still be around, though. Again, I'm not a medical professional. We think it'll still be hanging in the balance, but for farmers, it's the price of crude oil that's more important.
Yeah. Dan, you did it again, man. Knocked it out of the park. Good work, my friend. Thank you so much. Stay safe, and we will talk to you again soon.
Same to you. I wish the story was different, but it's what we have today.
Gotcha. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, man. That is Dan Bossy, Ag Resource Company out of Chicago. We got Davis with the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report coming up next.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not.
Today we're going to talk about key technologies to cut your production cost. For the spraying pest, let's consider the ExactApply nozzle control technology. With this technology, we've seen as much as a 5% decrease in inputs when utilizing the individual nozzle control capabilities and kerf compensation. If you think about a 12,000 acre producer in Western Canada that farms both wheat and canola, and if they're doing 3 applications a season with that sprayer, that could be as much as $15 an acre per each application. So 5% is about 75 cents an acre of savings. Multiply that over the 3 trips they're going to make across the 12,000 acres, that's a total savings of $27,000. So you may be used to running AutoTrac on your tractor or your sprayer, but have you thought about implementing that technology on your combine? Let's say you're a producer in the Southern Great Plains that has wheat and double crop soybeans. If you can reduce overlap by as much as 5%, that could be $1, $1.10 an acre. You know, over those 6,000 acres that you're harvesting, that's $6,000 plus that's in your pocketbook by just implementing that AutoTrac technology. Consider a 12,000 acre small grains producer in Western Canada that farms 3,000 acres of canola. Being over their target seed rate by just 10% could be as much as $6 per acre of wasted seed. Over 3,000 acres, that's $18,000 of wasted seed costs that producer could put back into his pocket by having a good calibration and hitting that target rate. ActiveCal is a technology on our newer air cards that allows for automatic adjustment for seed size and density to help producers hit very accurately their target rate. So technology can help us reduce our input costs at seeding, during application, and at harvest. And to learn more about that, go see your John Deere dealer. I'm Yancey Wright, and this has been John Deere Lead TV.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit Valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
You know, I played saxophone in high school, man, and jazz band.
I heard about that, yeah.
I could have knocked it.
Well, I saw the plaque in the Iowa High School Jazz Hall of Fame last time I was down there.
Exactly.
The Flory Wing.
Yeah, you know, that's me. You know, I graduated to the baritone sax by the time that we were in senior jazz band. And I'm telling you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be me with the big one. Yep. Yep.
I've got a trumpet just out of arm's reach right now.
Really?
Maybe we should do a duet sometime. Yeah.
Oh, man. That would take some memory recall. I'd have to do some practice first, I think.
You know what? We'll just call it jazz. You can play any note you want.
Anything I want. Anything I want.
It's Welcome jazz.
Back
it's art.
To AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Jazz Hands Davis there.
You can't see it, but I'm doing it right now.
Are you? Are you? I'm giving you the old air high five.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, don't leave me hanging, man. Come on.
Right back at you, big fella.
Thank you. Thank you. You can wink at each other, except we can't see each other.
Yeah, I don't know about the winking.
I don't know.
That gets a little weird.
I didn't even take a note. I did not even take a note. Well, no, I did write down $3.5 billion and $700 million.
Well, why would you write that part now?
well,
write down, we'll get through this.
I did it so that I could do this and throw it away. I don't like it.
Very nice. No, no.
I don't like those numbers at all.
Is it a complete insano mental institution impossibility?
No. No, it's not.
That's what makes it scary.
Well, and Dan is doing something with those numbers that were not, and I wrote about it in Farm Journal, my latest column for Farm Journal. Dan is doing something that we're not getting from USDA right now, and that is actual projections. Now, we've got a new head of the World Ag Outlook Board and the supply and demand tables. I don't know if that is going to change going forward. But as of right now, we're not getting any indication that they're going to factor in phase one China, that they're going to factor in COVID, that they're going to factor in any of the unknowns of the future or try to factor those in. Instead, they're just going to wait for the evidence that comes, present the evidence, and then factor it in. So our S&Ds are really backwards looking right now. And I'm not saying that that's the wrong approach. I'm just saying that's the way it is. So the S&Ds from USDA are backwards looking. Dan's trying to give us a forward looking approach there. Man, we can't. We got to get to it. We got to get to it. The Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor for weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district. Visit profarmer.com and now, Chip.
High five.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. By the way, shameless plug, a little bit. I talked to Doug Hensley. I recorded 22 minutes with Doug Hensley.
I heard
the president of Hertz Real
I
Estate.
Listened.
He put it up on Twitter. It's on profarmer.com. He had some fantastic things to say.
What
Doug and
a
I
great
were
great conversation.
I wanted to talk to him, and it just sort of evolved into this whole thing. I wanted to talk to him for Landowner and you know, write up the interview, which I did. That issue is coming out next week. It'll go to press. I want to get him back on the phone again next week because we didn't even scratch the surface on the implications for the land market when it comes to ethanol.
Yep.
Big changes coming there. Yep. And I don't know if we want to try and get him as a guest on AgriTalk. I'm going to make sure and have that conversation and get it out to the listeners, to the subscribers. So I'm looking forward to that conversation.
Segment four on Monday or Tuesday there, Joe Stackler. Let's get that lined up.
I already sent the email over to Doug. Hey, you got any availability next week? Any chance at all? but it's been a busy week here. My fuel report this week is titled Two Different Fuels, Two Different Responses. If BJ Split gets credit for this, and we could not get together and record, otherwise I'd be rolling a recording of him talking about it right now. But if you look at gasoline futures versus heating oil futures, the spread there has completely upended itself, completely backwardized itself. And it's really interesting the way that the crude oil price plunge and the coronavirus are impacting the different fuels in different ways. Basically, the long and the short of it is you can go to profarmer.com and read my write-up on the deal, including Brian Split's quote. My outlook is unchanged so far. We're still headed lower on diesel. We're down 4 cents this week. Let me get my page to a regional average. Yeah, 227 this week compares to last year's $2.39 the same week. I believe we've got a little bit more downside, but transport's going to pick up. Fieldwork's going to pick up. Demand for diesel is going to pick up probably sooner than gasoline demand picks up. So if you wonder why is my gasoline so cheap and my diesel is not, check out the spreads in the futures between gas and the distillate market and heating oil futures. Fertilizers generally higher this week, but mildly so. Anhydrous ammonia up 16 cents, 50908. DAP is up 35 cents, 41908. MAP is up $1.76, 40914. Vitamin K potash up 43 cents, 359.07. UAN 28% up 37 cents, 236.76 regionally. 32% is up 23 cents, 274.62. Urea lead gains in the fertilizer segment up 645 to 368.04. All told, our nutrient composite index climbed 2.10 points to 532.15. That compares to our five-year average of 616.59. We're narrowing that gap between expected new crop revenue and our nutrient composite index, but it still leans in favor of fertilizers. Chip.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, good work this week, Davis, and good work to you this week as well, Joe Stackler.
Yes.
It was a tough week, and for those of you that don't know, and I would assume that's most of you, Joe Stackler is still going into the office making sure that we get on the air every day.
Every day. Thank you, Joe.
We really appreciate all of his efforts to make sure that we're getting on the air.
I just got a text here.
Yeah?
Ted the Hammer plays the trombone. We're getting it together.
We're going to get it.
The AgriTalk concert band may actually be a thing.
We're getting the band together. I love it. Monday morning, we've got NCGA CEO John Doggett. And Monday afternoon, we'll get you ready for the USDA reports with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research. Have a safe weekend, everyone. Look out for each other out there. Take care.
Getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.